Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Hate speech.
Hello. As I was preparing this week's broadcast, the news story causing the most excitement in the controlled media was a series of drive-by shootings last weekend in Illinois and Indiana by a 21-year-old student at the University of Indiana, Benjamin Smith, who killed himself as police were trying to arrest him. In addition to himself, Smith killed only two other people. Not much to get excited about by today's standards when drive-by shootings are a nightly occurrence in a number of our larger cities. What really had the media people stirred up about Smith, however, was the fact that he was a member of a pro-white church, and his targets were all non-whites, blacks, Jews, and Asians. A black and an Asian died. I don't know anything about Smith, except what was on the television news and the internet, but I cannot help but feel some sympathy for him. Smith, according to those who knew him, was intelligent, quiet, and serious. He was a student of criminal justice at the University of Indiana. Most notable, however, he was racially conscious. He was unhappy about the destruction of our white society in America and the perversion of our European culture by the program of multiculturalization promoted by the government and the media. He distributed leaflets on the University of Indiana campus in Bloomington expressing his views, and the university administration harassed him for it. He distributed leaflets off the campus in Bloomington and in the Chicago suburb of Wilmette, Illinois, where he grew up. Leftists, feminists, and Jews organized a public demonstration against him in Bloomington in an effort to stop his leaflet distribution, and the police in Wilmette arrested him. Blacks repeatedly smashed the windows of his apartment in Bloomington to show their disagreement with Smith's racist views. It must have been very stressful for Smith, trying to exercise his freedom of speech in a society which pays lip service to our Bill of Rights, but which actually tries its best to make life difficult for anyone who doesn't toe the party line. Finally, something snapped, and Smith began shooting at Jews, blacks, and Asians. He apparently had given up completely at trying to make a difference with his leaflets, and his shooting was an expression of his frustration. He obviously didn't intend to survive. He didn't try to conceal his identity. He simply drove up to groups of non-whites in his car in broad daylight and began shooting, then drove off until he saw another group of non-whites and began shooting again. Now the media people are wringing their hands and asking the question, how did this man's talk about hate lead to a racist killing spree? And the media are trotting out all their Jewish experts to ask similar questions. I saw Rabbi Marvin Heer, one of the head Jews at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and Mark Potok, a Jewish expert at the Southern Poverty Law Center, both on television asking, how can we stop hateful talk like that in Benjamin Smith's leaflets from leading to hateful acts like this series of shootings? And from the leers on their Jewish faces when they ask this question, you can see what they're thinking. You can guess what they want the television viewers to think. They want to plant the suggestion that the way to stop racial violence and hostility is to stop what they call hate speech. If no one is permitted to say hateful things, they suggest, then people will be less inclined to do hateful things. That's the sort of feminine reasoning which seems to be agreeable to America's couch potatoes. You know, I haven't seen any of Benjamin Smith's leaflets, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was nothing hateful at all in them. What the Jews call hate speech these days, what they want to have outlawed, is any politically incorrect speech. They don't care about crude or vulgar expressions of hatred because they don't see that as very persuasive or effective. The speech they want outlawed is any speech which might be dangerous to them, any speech which exposes their schemes or interferes with their plans. As I said, I cannot help but feel some sympathy for Benjamin Smith. When I lived in Washington, D.C., I was almost constantly enraged by what I saw all around me. In Washington, it wasn't just the presence of the blacks and the Jew doing. It was at least as much the behavior of the whites which enraged me. It was the effeminate and pusillanimous behavior of the members of the white majority who really didn't like blacks and Jews much more than I did, but who were terrified of being thought racist or politically incorrect if anyone found out what they were thinking. It was the trendy liberal airheads mindlessly parroting every cliche they learned from television and eagerly embracing every fad which came along, no matter how degenerate or destructive. It was the homosexuals and the pushy, obnoxiously assertive feminists who knew they were on a roll and were determined to make the most of it. And it was the utterly corrupt and deceitful behavior of the politicians and the bureaucrats and the media people in Washington which enraged me. If anybody in this country really needs to be put to death, it's not the convicted serial killers sitting on death row in the various state prisons. It's the people sitting in public offices in Washington, all of them. And it's the lying, treacherous minions of the controlled media, panting and wagging their tails frantically in the hope of receiving a pat on the head from their Jewish masters every time they slant the news in the required direction or put the proper spin on a story. Washington is really the armpit of the universe, where nothing is too corrupt or treacherous or destructive. And I did find it frustrating being there and watching all of the degenerates and criminals doing their filthy work and not being able to stop them. There were times when I had some pretty violent thoughts, but I am not suicidal. And perhaps I have a little more self-discipline than Benjamin Smith had. Perhaps I am a little better able to postpone my gratification. And so I wrote books instead of going on shooting sprees. But I still sympathize with Benjamin Smith. It's just a shame that he didn't have a little more self-control. The media circus resulting from Smith's activity last weekend is what we have come to expect from the Jews who control the media. It was another excuse for them to harp on the dangers of permitting whites to think racist thoughts and express racist sentiments. And this time, they even had the titillating twist of a white racist church to work into the story. It's really too bad that they had virtually nothing to say about a black church which has been involved in the racially motivated murder of whites. The charges recently brought against one of the members of this black church for the murder of a white man would have given them an opportunity to tell us about some far more interesting things than the two killings by Benjamin Smith. The black church to which I'm referring is the Black Hebrew Israelites, led by Yahweh ben Yahweh. The murderer I mentioned is Robert Rozier, a black former National Football League player. On March 23rd of this year, that's just 3.5 months ago, Rozier was charged with the ritual murder of a white man outside one of his church's meeting places in Newark, New Jersey. Rozier and another black member of the church, John Armstrong, stabbed 52-year-old Attilio Chikala to death as a ritual sacrifice of a white man to their black leader, Yahweh ben Yahweh, who was born with the name Hulon Mitchell. The murder charge against the black football player Rozier, was reported by the Associated Press in March, but I'll bet you never heard about it. The news was even printed in the New York Times, but no one I've spoken to remembers seeing it. People tend not to notice little two-paragraph news items which appear just once on page 126, tucked in among the ads for hemorrhoid relief and telephone sex. You can still dig it up from the New York Times site on the Internet, however, if you're interested. The point is that the way in which the news is reported makes all the difference. Most people in this feminized age simply don't relate to bare facts. They relate only to other people. They aren't able to assimilate evidence that doesn't appear in a personal context. It just doesn't mean anything to them unless Tom Brokaw or Bill Clinton or someone else they can relate to explains it to them and tells them how they should respond to it. They really do need to be told whether or not a news item is interesting and what attitude they should have toward it. I'm sorry, but that is the level to which the television viewing American public has sunk. And that's why the news about the ritual murder of Attilio Chikala outside the so-called Black Hebrew Israelite Temple in Newark has made virtually no impression on the consciousness of the public. And that's too bad, because it's really an interesting story, much more interesting than the story of Benjamin Smith's shooting of a black and a Korean last weekend. The Jewish media bosses hoped that you wouldn't pay any attention to the news about the murder of Attilio Chikala. But I'm going to tell you about it now because I think it's something you ought to know. The story goes back 25 years to a horrendous series of racial murders in California, many of them in the San Francisco area. Over a period of 6 months in 1973 and 1974, members of an offshoot of the black Muslims called Death Angels murdered several hundred white men, women, and children. The exact number will never be known because many of the victims were so-called street people, runaway teenaged girls on drugs, hippies, and the like, people who weren't missed. There were many of these pitiful lost souls on the streets of San Francisco in the 1960s and 1970s. Their corpses often were hacked up and dumped in the ocean or buried. But the San Francisco police who tracked the Death Angels counted 15 very tangible victims from all walks of life, not just street people. 15 murdered white people and 8 others who were seriously injured during attempts to murder them. While they were looking for the killers, the police referred to the series of murders as the zebra killings, all black on white. Eventually, the Death Angels were broken up when San Francisco police arrested 8 of them. 4 of them were put on trial, and after the longest trial in California history, 1 year and 6 days, were convicted on all counts. The transcript for the trial filled nearly 14,000 pages and was bound in 141 volumes. You say you never heard of any of this? Could that be because the Jewish media bosses, the ones who have been making such a circus of Benjamin Smith's killing of 1 black and 1 Korean, didn't want you to hear about it? Could it be that the news of the zebra murders didn't fit the pattern of white aggressors and non-white victims that the media bosses wanted to imprint on the consciousness of the white public? During the trial of the 4 Death Angels between March 3, 1975 and March 9, 1976, a great deal of interesting information came out that the white public should have been told about. One of the Death Angels who had been involved in many of the murders, Anthony Harris, obtained immunity from prosecution by testifying against the other Death Angels. Harris was on the witness stand for 12 days, and the chilling details of his testimony make very interesting reading. He told the court that the Nation of Islam, the so-called black Muslims, taught that the murder of a white person, a blue-eyed devil, was pleasing to Allah. There was an elite organization in the Nation of Islam whose members had especially pleased Allah. That was the death angels. To become a death angel, one had to murder 9 white men, or 5 white women, or 4 white children. In 1974, the San Francisco chapter of the Death Angels had 15 accredited members. Harris related the horrifying details of some of the murders. There were the young white couple, Richard and Keita Haig, who were grabbed off a San Francisco street at gunpoint, taken to a rail yard, and butchered with a machete. Richard, a mining engineer, was 30 years old. His wife, Keita, a reporter, was 28. They were out for an after-dinner stroll when 3 black Muslims forced them into a van. 2 of the Muslims were in the process of raping Keita when the 3rd grabbed her by the hair, dragged her over to the railroad tracks, and slashed her throat. Some of the white victims were taken to a loft used by the death angels, where they were tied to chairs and tortured to death. Harris testified that he was given the butchered remnants of one of these kidnapped torture victims, all trussed up in a plastic sheet like a turkey, and told to drive the package to a bluff overlooking San Francisco Bay and throw it into the water. Other victims, more fortunate, were simply gunned down on the street. And the killing wasn't confined to San Francisco or even to California. Other groups of death angels murdered whites in other states, in New York, in Georgia, in Florida. The word spread among black Muslims everywhere. The only people who didn't hear about what was happening were ordinary white citizens like Richard and Keita Haig. They didn't hear about it because the Jewish media bosses didn't want the white population to become alarmed. They didn't want whites to take measures to protect themselves. They didn't want whites to stop feeling guilty about how badly they had treated minorities. One black Muslim in Atlanta, who learned that the murder of blue-eyed devils was pleasing to Allah, was Hulan Mitchell, known at the time as Hulan X. Hulan was given control of a Muslim mosque in Atlanta, but his career in the Nation of Islam was cut short when he was caught dipping into the collection plate and having sex with underage Muslim girls. Hulan moved to Florida. In 1978, he founded his own black church in Miami. He called it the Nation of Yahweh, calling its members black Hebrew Israelites, and took for himself the name of Yahweh ben Yahweh. Hulan's new church flourished, and he soon formed an elite group in it, which he called the Circle of Ten. He also branched out to several other cities, including Newark. He taught his followers that the killing of blue-eyed devils was pleasing to Yahweh rather than to Allah. Soon, one of the members of his church, NFL player Robert Rozier, brought him the ear of a white man he had just murdered, his first victim. A number of other victims followed during the next few years. One of these victims was Attilio Cicala, the 52-year-old Italian man murdered in Newark. As with the death angels in California, many of the ritual murder victims chosen by Yahweh's followers were the easiest white victims, people who wouldn't be missed. Young runaways, street people, whites who lived in black neighborhoods or who associated with blacks. It wasn't until November 1990 that the police finally wound up Yahweh's murder spree, charging him and 16 of his followers with a number of felonies, including 14 murders. Actually, the murder of Attilio Cicala was not one of the 14 murders the black Hebrew Israelites were charged with. That murder remained unsolved until last year, when black Israelite John Armstrong, also known as Yochanan Israel, was charged. And finally, Rozier also was charged in the murder of Chikala this March. He will be tried later this year. Well, blacks will be blacks, and they at least understand that we're engaged in a race war. But that's our fault, really. We shouldn't have brought them here. As soon as we rectify that mistake, a big part of the war will be over. Meanwhile, there's not much point in our being angry at blacks or shooting one or two of them here and there, a la Benjamin Smith. That's just foolishness. What we need to win this war is self-discipline, iron self-discipline, and Benjamin Smith didn't have it. We also need knowledge of the sort I try to disseminate with these broadcasts. If we're to make intelligent decisions about the world around us and about our future, we need to know that hundreds of white Americans have been ritually murdered by members of black religious groups during the past 25 years. Even more do we need to know that news of these murders has been suppressed by the Jewish news media, and we need to understand why this news has been suppressed. We need to know what the Jews and their political, ideological, and religious allies are aiming for when they deliberately suppress the news of the mass murders of whites by the death angels of the Nation of Islam and the black Hebrew Israelite followers of Yahweh ben Yahweh, while filling our television screens day after day with the details of Benjamin Smith's killing of one black and one Asian. We need to know these things if we are not simply to be led like lambs to the slaughter. Knowledge and discipline, those are the keys to our survival as a people. Knowledge of what is really happening in the world and why, and the self-discipline to deal collectively and effectively with the very real threats to the future of our people, rather than expressing our frustration in foolish and undisciplined acts of premature violence. And if our knowledge leads us to anger, to rage of the sort that I felt while living in Washington, and of the sort that Benjamin Smith presumably felt while attending the very politically correct University of Indiana, let us direct that rage not at the random black or Asian on the street, but rather at the evil creatures who planned the government policies which are putting more and more blacks and Asians on our streets, policies which are leading America into becoming a non-white country in the next few decades. Let us direct our rage at the evil creatures who conspire to keep our people ignorant of the real dangers around them by suppressing the news of the zebra murders and the black Hebrew Israelite murders. And if we sometimes feel ourselves frustrated by the willful ignorance of the lemmings and by the malice of those among our people who have cast their lot with our people's enemies, let us remember that it is we who are becoming stronger, not they. Let us remember that more and more of our people are understanding what is happening and are drawing the correct conclusions. Let us remember that with growing knowledge and growing self-discipline among our people, we, not they, will prevail. Thanks for being with me again today.